Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
We'll be talking about future of identity, and as we just heard, probably very near future, and hopefully. But the question is, why on earth yet another digital identity? By the way, some people, even in civilized world, don't have any identity because they don't have to cross borders. But now we are talking about digital identity in Europe, where countries are so different in their way of identifying people. Some are still using a paper driver permits, where pictures are just stapled in. Like in Spain, it was still available until 2017. And it was okay, because who would like to do something bad with it? So what can we learn from the success and shortcomings of previous identity systems? The evolving role of digital identity wallets within the broader context? Then we will talk about how can we protect users' private information. That's what people are afraid of. At the same time, sharing all their information on social media. Then should governments develop their own wallets? Or it's a multi-provider approach the way forward? And please welcome the co-founder and CEO of TrueSix, Julia Gifford, as moderator. And her panel.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here. And today we are getting into a topic that will impact us all. So before we get into our round of introductions, I want to find out more about our audience. So could everyone who is here, raise your hand if you have studied abroad. All right, we've got a good chunk, maybe a third. Keep your hands up.
Excuse me, for how long?
Okay, we don't have the time to get into that. Any amount of time. Okay, so we've got about a chunk, a third. Who here has worked abroad? Yeah, okay, keep your hands up as well. Who here has had to open a bank account abroad? Uh-huh, more hands. Who has had to sign a document with someone who's in a different country? Yeah, so we've got like triple, quadruple people in this room. So we have some, and everyone who has experienced this knows firsthand that it can be a bit of a pain. Your country's identity policies might not necessarily mesh with the country that you've been in. And this is the promise of the digital identity wallets in the European Union. So I am joined here, and we will get into the personal introductions. All these people do some really cool things with Gatis Uazos, Riho Kurg, Tor Alvik, and Madis Ehatsu. So I would love to go through first and find out what you do and what your interest is in digital wallets to give our audience a context for this conversation.
Yeah. Gatti. Yes, hello, my name is Gatis. I'm representing the Ministry of Smart Administration and Regional Development here in Latvia. So basically what I'm doing, I try to figure out what I'm doing. We are enabling innovations. So enabling, but in sense of making the proper regulation on providing initiatives, the funding for the initiatives. Basically, we as a ministry are the responsible for orchestrating the implementation of European Digital Innovation Wallet in Latvia with our partners, with the agencies, with the stakeholders. So basically the policy developer and the regulator.
Perfect. Thank you. Riho.
Yes, my name is Riho Kurg, and I am representing right now ZETES. ZETES Estonia, and I have been in the field of public sector digitalization consulting for last 10 years and very closely in the wallet space since 2021 in different capabilities, including Estonian government at one point. And right now, I'm proud to say that starting Monday, I'm representing a new QTSP in Estonia, ZETES Estonia. So it's a good personal milestone to share.
Thank you, Tor.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Tor Alvik. I work for the Norwegian Digitization Agency. That's my day job. There I work with EID policy, strategy, and now trying to build the Norwegian wallet ecosystem together with my colleagues. The last couple of years, I also had the pleasure of coordinating one of the large-scale pilots, working with several Latvian colleagues, so you can test the result downstairs if you want. So that's been great, and I also work with you, together with Madis in the EU cooperation.
Perfect, and last but not least, Madis.
Hi, I'm Madis, working for the European Commission. So in a way, I'm representing the agreement that not only the Commission, but also the Parliament and the Member States reached on the eIDAS regulation, or the Digital Identity Framework regulation. I've been working particularly on the technical specification for a long time, so 5 years now on this project, and also on implementing mobile driving licenses, for instance. So. Different roles I've had in the project.
So we will ask you all the hard questions. So just before this panel, we had a keynote by Geert Peeters, who was outlining the eIDAS promise and product itself and very well, and I hope that everyone was able to catch that. But in case you didn't, there is the digital identity wallet that has been promised to be made available to all EU residents by 2026. So my question for Madis is, can you tell us, bring us up to speed into what is that promise in a nutshell?
Sure. So eIDAS is a regulation that has been there for a long time, but the penetration of the or its success has been limited to eID. Now, since 2021, we have... 23. We have the eIDAS 2 regulation, as it's known, the European Digital Identity Framework, which introduces kind of a totally new concept, these European Digital Identity Wallets, which is the kind of the main new addition. This time, it doesn't only focus on the eID, but also signatures. Quite crucial for a lot of processes and a lot of and provides a platform for additional documents such as driving licenses, social security cards, what else you might have there, what else is needed. So it was quite good to see, or interesting to see, a lot of hands raised in the opening question that people actually do have a lot of cross-border experiences and. And the current kind of nationally built solutions quite often focus on the national kind of context, the ecosystem, identity, management approaches. And what we try to do from the Commission side is really kind of drive this cross-border use cases, focus on these. And we've received quite a lot of positive feedback on the approach, what they were doing. So right now, we are about a year away from member states with the deadline to issue the wallets. So right now, it's the busiest time. It's a super interesting time because everybody is building European digital identity wallet for the first time. So a lot of the details are kind of. There's a lot of learning in the Commission and in the Member States, and it's quite a fascinating kind of time to work on this project right now.
Perfect, thank you. And that outlines it so well. Really, the cross-border aspect is the key. And now there's been a lot of discussion over the years about why this is necessary. Now, we all know why it's necessary, but the question is, how do we move forward in the actual implementation? Like you mentioned, everyone's doing this for the first time. So my question for Riho, as a stakeholder who is working on this problem at this moment, my question for you is, what is the state of the digital identity wallet implementation at this moment? To move past the question of why do we need it, but how is this actually going to happen?
Yeah, it's it's not only that move away, that why we also have to move away. We have already moved away from the point that if, because I remember times then when people were actually saying that this is something that cannot be done at all because reasons.
Never say never.
So we are now in the stage that many member states, they are building wallet. They are building wallet first under their own internal rules. So whatever happens with the finalizing the EU acts, they will be ready to this own wallet to become an EU wallet. Of course, even countries who are very advanced with the current EID means like Estonia, Latvia, Belgium. Every country has a plan. Every country has a plan how to do it. And I think that there are a couple of key things regarding the digital wallet. One of them is definitely the legislation side. The other side is the certification that we will probably touch for a bit. But the most important is that we see this nice slide about Christmas present in 2026. But and I like it. I like to get presents from the government. But it's not a sprint. It's not that this is the last 400 days where we have to run. Yes, we have to run, but we have to remember that this is not a sprint. This is an endurance sport. We are introducing a next step in the evolution, and we are not introducing it for the current citizen, but also for the future citizens, the people who don't want to handle the cards, that they want to do something in the mobile, and they need to do it in cross border. So we are building something that is that has much longer implications. Yes, we are doing the sprint right now, but everybody has to understand that this is only the sprint, and we don't need to empty ourselves for the sprint and get, okay, we are there now. Which is probably a little bit controversial for the politicians. Because
for the politicians and also for the techies who are doing everything agile and quick. But now, Todd mentioned the large-scale pilot project in your introduction, and now both Norway and Latvia were part of the same group, and I'm very interested in how this, in preparation for the implementation, there was this year-long large-scale pilot testing the feasibility of some of the functionalities of the digital identity wallet. I'm curious, and I'm sure our audience are also curious, what did that look like? What were your experiences, and do you have any takeaways from that pilot? So maybe Gata, you can start, and we'll follow with Tor.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely, we are happy to be the part of the NoBit consortium and one of the piloting partners, and we are happy to be the active contributor, not only participant, because we were I think the only country which chose the Model B for the consortium. The Model B, it means that you develop your own platform or your own wallet for the piloting. So we did it with our partner from Latvia State Radio Television Center. So they were as a piloting partner, and we actually get to the functioning prototypes that also was test on usability aspects with real users. So at the end of the May and beginning of the June this year, so we have some conclusions out of this project, and we were piloting like a two use cases. One was the payment use case, and there was a partner from SAB Bank, and the other use case was diploma attributes. So it was provided by Riga Technical University. So we tested both the onboarding, the identification, the issuance of qualified electronic attestations attributes, and supported also electronic signature. So the pilot scenarios were onboarding and adding digital identity to the wallet, presenting digital identity to a verifier, and also onboarding and presenting a diploma to the verifier. During those months, we had a lot of conclusions regarding legal, practical, and also usability aspects. And maybe just share the one practical thing that came out of the citizens. There was the colleagues from the State Radio Television Center shared when they did the user testing. They said that I only trust the thing because it's government provided.
Okay.
Because of that sensitivity, probably of the data that you are holding in the wallet. So it's important that you have this kind of government seal of trust on this product. So I think that this will take some time also for the institutions, not only for the institutions, but also though for the people to onboard with their kind of real life attributes. But in aside to this, I think there is another important. We see this application level that as a central focal point currently. But I think what's most important, or more important, is to create this ecosystem that there are a lot of different wallets from private for public sector could work, and we would nationally support from with APIs, with provision of access to trusted attributes. And so on. So this is another stream we are nationally working that's not been seen maybe in public, but it's taking even more time probably than the development of the application.
Okay, so fascinating. So Tor, then your experience would be the other, not the B, but the A?
Well, we approached the wallet part a little bit different. But I think maybe a starting point, this is the name of the regulation. It's called an identity framework. It is kind of, when you build this wallet, you build kind of a hammer. You make it to do stuff. And in our case, our main concern of the large-scale pilot was how can you do payment with the wallet? And that is also the same with all of the other large-scale pilots. They have different user stories. And the ADAS framework is something you use to make a user story happen. It deals with a lot of other legislation, lots of other systems, a lot of other tradition. For instance, in payment, is kind of a touchy field. You are moving with larger actors. In our consortium, we had people like Amazon and the German Saving Banks Association, big, big players. And what was the great thing was that during this time, and also in cooperation with other large-scale pilots, we were actually able to address how can you do payment with wallets, and were able to reach kind of a common understanding and agreement on how this could be. And you can now see that this is moving into, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but we are working with kind of an architectural framework, which then leads into the legislation. So several of the things that we worked on the large-scale pilots now have moved into the architectural framework and then moving into how we can regulate it. And also working with partners outside the pilots, for instance, in payment, where you have the big interest organizations that have, of course, a large say in how this is addressed, and be able to engage and talk with them. I think this is something that's overlooked much, and you have the same thing with all of the other complex user stories. More on a national level, you have always surprising to see when people start working with it, because they expect they are coming into a kind of arrangement where people are just building a wallet. And then you present them this ecosystem picture of all the different roles that you have to realize to actually build an wallet ecosystem. And you can see, at least in Norway, we have a kind of a private-public partnership around EID and identity, and you can see how people can find their role and place in this new ecosystem, which does change both economy around it, how can you make money as a private vendor, for instance, what kind of a role is the state going to take, and how is you going to set this up? And I think that is something that we learned a lot of during these couple of years. And now we are moving to the next phase. So yesterday we launched a kind of a national sandbox where you have a lot of the different same partners that came into the large-scale pilot now taking part in the next phase of the development.
So how was it working with those big behemoths like the Amazons and the Apples, who probably aren't interested in collaborating on our European identity wallets? Were they forthcoming?
In the beginning, we actually thought, oh, now they want to come into our nice little consortia. That must be very scary. But it was the other way around. They were very engaged, very interested in how this could be used. And you can quite easily, we have some videos on how Amazon's take on how they can do payment within their portals and infrastructure could be carried out. So my experience is this. Completely other way around, that they actually want to see how
we are the scary ones. Dip.
Huh?
We're the scary ones, is what you're saying. Other way around.
I think they maybe are a bit afraid that now the state and government is coming in, taking control of everything. There will be no market left for us and so on. And I think in that regard, the large-scale pilots works fine, because then you can see that this is not the case, and you can see the new ones. I mean, they have several hundred partners coming from the private industry.
Absolutely. And you touched on, everyone has touched on, who will build the wallets. Is it the private sector, the public sector? And then I suppose this question I want to ask to Riho, who will build these wallets? And I know that there's no correct answer, but I'm curious as to your opinion.
Yeah, there is no correct answer, but there is a difference. If the government is building the wallet, does it mean that government has a group of developers somewhere in the basement? You create the wallet. It's more often it's not the case. It's the governments who are building the wallets for long time on their own purpose. Like we take Finland, we take Poland. They are using private companies who are doing the development. Or the same with the case with the Latvian pilot, the Estonian proof of concept. There are always private companies who are doing the heavy lifting in the technical side, and currently the governments are always tending to outsource the complicated setups to the private companies. So it's because I think we are behind from the situation. The government needs to have a big central data center with bunch of governmental engineers and competing for these engineers' time and resources. I think that it's basically every country, every member state makes a decision whether to outsource the whole solution or put together the parts from different parties. It's all in the air, and in the private sector point of view, because I was working previously trying to outsource this wallet development in the different companies in Estonia, now working from the private sector, it is important that the private sector like Zetes, we can offer different components. We can offer the full solution, but we can offer the different components that, this is the part that can be done locally, this is the part that can be reused, this is the part that only government can do. Mm. So it is very important to be this kind of open-minded set of thinking that it's not all or nothing. It's always and probably will always be a combination we bring an example from the Belgian wallet, where Zetes is doing only remote signature part, which we can say as a QTSP, we can say, this is the real heavy lifting, but probably all the other counterparts are thinking the same. So it's really a collective effort, and in the end of the day, I don't think that there will be many government managed wallets.
And Thor, you had mentioned, ahead.
Yeah, and I think we are not building just one type of wallet. We are getting the new legislation coming out on the European business wallet. It's coming soon. And of course, if you're going to build a business wallet, it needs to be done completely different, because you can't, as a business, carry around an app on a phone. That would not work very well. And then if this is market-driven, then it's important actually to have a private market with trust service providers being able to provide the different components, being able to build the ecosystems that our businesses should rely on. And it is the same framework, both for the person wallet and probably the business wallet. It builds on IDAS, both of them. So to have this set up around a private public partnership, I think it is important, and I also think it's important that the public sector must take some of the hard and important roles. For instance, we have been the guarantee. key for your identity, at least in our Nordic countries, for several hundred years, providing passports and ID cards and everything, and that we continue also to be the trust anchor for your identity, like we have it issuing of a PID in a wallet, for instance. I think that's important. Mm-hmm.
And one of the important questions that still seems to have remained unanswered, and I would love to hear anyone's opinion on this, is who will pay? Because, as we know, the regulation stipulates that it has to be free to use, but we also know that nothing in this world is free. Someone's time and effort is going into building this, and that time and effort has to be remunerated in some way. So maybe we can go down the line. Gatti, do you have any ideas?
I think it depends on the model, how you implement, because also according to the regulation, you have some different modes how you implement the wallet. It can be like you recognize some private sector or you develop your own. In Latvia, currently, we have chosen the way to work with our own wallet, but of course, as was also mentioned, with the support and assistance from the private sector, because we don't have like internal developers. And from our perspective, it's much more important from our case to we believe in the power of ecosystem, so we need to enable that there are a lot of private sector wallet providers could function within Latvia, so the citizens would be able to choose the most suitable option for themselves. But from the government side, we don't want to compete with those private sector providers, but as a government, we would provide like a basic service for our citizens, would integrate the wallet functionality with also a national digital service platform and also the trusted digital post platform, so that a citizen from the government perspective would have like a unified experience. In addition to that, there will be an option for him to choose the private sector providers, which can probably have some added on value for them that's not provided, will not provide in any case from the government side. Regarding the costs, and of course each of those models, it's a different way how you pay for that. On our model, but this basic functionality will be provided by the government, and we'll still working on the business model, but probably we see that the most of this basic functionality will be also like supported by the government side. But then if private sector providers will come, so there'll be some other options how we can agree.
All right.
And there's some pros and cons in every of those options, but currently this is the way how we are looking on that.
So marketplace environment where you have the option of both and a hybrid type of funding.
Yes. And then it's properly kind of business driven, then government, but for the basic functionality, we see the government responsibility.
Great. And Madis, what does the European Commission think about this?
The focus of the regulation or kind of the agreement is really to focus on the interoperability, so that the different wallets, so it's not going to be the one wallet, right, but each member state will be issuing their own wallets, one or more, that they can work then cross-border. But the, let's say, these operational aspects, these business models are then undefined or, well, left flexible. Because indeed the approaches to how you consume public services, how you identify yourself, do you have which types of identities do you use vis-a-vis governments, but also vis-a-vis private sector? Like, can you use governmental identity with private sector entities, for instance? Member states have different approaches, and respecting these, then the kind of the regulation allows for the most flexible approaches in member states, so that these wallets have a chance also to be successful not only cross-border but also nationally.
And I also, the wallet, it introduces new concepts, the qualified attributes. It's a new way to use and share data. To get the private sector on board, there need to be a payment model and a market model where you actually both can get paid for producing these attributes, and also where you pay maybe for consuming them, but also on the user side for several different things. So we have started work, at least back home now, to see how we can develop that field. I think that's a very important part, because nobody actually wants an empty wallet. It's kind of boring. So,
but do you have any ideas to which approach Norway will use?
I think we can build on some of the stuff that we already have done, since we have this private public partnership on identity. We have identity providers like the Norwegian Bank ID, which is already there. It could be possible to build on some of these models. We also have a functioning trust service provider set up with 3-4 of them in place already. But I think it needs to be a consensus-driven approach where we need to engage with market stakeholders to actually develop this model. So that's what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I want to touch on are the challenges that we have ahead of us. And so this question will be for Madison. I've heard some rumors around town that some smaller countries are concerned that the timeline isn't sufficient for implementation from the European Commission side, as there has to be a certification process that goes into place, and the idea, at least from the small country side, is that then surely there will be a line of countries lining up to be certified, and that maybe the smaller countries might be not be at the top of the priority list. Now, is the timeline realistic, and is there a foundation for this concern?
Thanks for the question. So the approach for the wallets is important to kind of recognize is that it's designed in a way that you can have different member states issuing their own wallets, not like a central wallet, across EU. To enable this model in a way that these wallets can then also be still used cross-border, you need to trust them, like that they are issued and operated in an appropriate manner, which is always a big concern for member states. Remember, these wallets are used for quite critical operations like identification, doing quite important life events, electronic signatures, quite critical in a lot of operations in governments, right, in your daily life. So certification is an important model in here, right? The challenges. It's something that is there isn't yet a clear kind of a certification model for wallets, and everybody's been working on this quite intensively. Since the agreement was made, it's not something that the timeline and the certification is not only something that the Commission is pushing, but something that really was agreed by all the counterparts, all the member states and the Parliament as well. So the Commission is totally recognizing that there is a lot of new things to do for everyone. We have published all the kind of the rule set that that everybody would follow to do the certification, but not only the certification, but also the interoperability and other elements. We're also working on kind of these adoption aspects and the different use cases, and we are financing large-scale pilots, not only to do the kind of the testing of the applications and the use cases, but also to finance member states working together to work on certification, for instance. This call was just launched, the week before last, right? And we're actively or regularly discussing these topics on a technical level with member states on a weekly basis, basically. And all the kind of the results from the discussion, for instance, for the certification schemes, there is a template that the Commission has published that member states can use and make use of. And all of this information, which I find quite unique in a way, is that we're very actively, like in a modern development, working on a public space on GitHub. All the documentation is there. It's not only the member states who can comment, but also the industry players and stakeholders, private, civil society stakeholders, can actively pitch into these discussions at any time. So But as I mentioned in the beginning, there is a lot of learning involved. As regards the deadline, we have a number of member states who are quite convinced that they are able to meet the deadlines. So we have kind of and from the Commission side, we're doing as much as possible to help all the member states to kind of reach these deadlines in a nice manner. Right.
So long story short is, it should be fine. Sorry.
As a, as a part of a small country, the certification scheme for these wallets, it's something that's new to all of us. It also requires a very special skill set to work on. So to try and pool resources and work together also on developing that, we have done now lately some work on Nordic level together with the Nordic Customs Ministry and Finland. Where we're trying to build a kind of a common certification scheme and to continue down that line and pooling together our competent resources and see how we could work together. And also with the support from the Commission and maybe also there see how you can also strengthen the support around the effort, I think will be quite valuable. But it's new to us that we are working in that space to do it on this scale. So absolutely.
It's an exciting time for everyone involved. And now, Gatti, you mentioned early on that one of the big takeaways in the large-scale pilot was the legislative challenges that arose. Now, maybe you can elaborate more about how the sleek, simple wallet interface is just the tip of the iceberg that we all see, and there is so much more underneath. Can you tell us more about how easy or difficult it is to develop a trustful platform?
Yeah, I think that I agree to Rihol before mentioned that this like a short-term view and on long-term view perspective, because we are meeting the challenges with technical development, implementation, and certification. But I think apart from this, we have to focus also on the most important part of the uptake of the completeness of the service, because if we meet like on next Christmas the wallet, but that's empty, so we have to manage those expectations early on better on than rather to meet this nice present with just a box without anything in it, but nice and shiny. So I think this is that governments and also the ecosystem together have to work on, and it's upon not that so much technical part as regulatory part, so that we would have the full wallets with a lot of documents and attributes that can be used. And on the other side, there would be the regulation would be put in the place on the relying on those attributes and documents. Otherwise, I go to the, I don't know, club and want to show that I'm over 18, but nobody recognize, or policeman on the street, nobody recognize. Even it's said in the regulation, still, you have to do the national work of explaining, of adjusting regulation. So I think this is, from our, like, as a ministry perspective, most important part also to cover this aspect as well. So it would be functional when it's developed.
So much coordination across all of the different sectors that might need, for example, just identification. Yep. And then there are so many different aspects of that. Is there anything to add, Riho?
Yeah, exactly. Because when we have the EU regulation part down with all the implementation act, and then as Kati said, there is a whole set of the member state level regulations and also laws. But I think that from the member state perspective is also something that you pay attention to, not make the rules more rigid than they actually are already, but you offer this kind of flexibility to allow the innovation, because the innovation that has been happening in Estonia, Latvia and Belgium, it has been happened because there was room for the innovation, and the laws and regulations, they were coming afterwards in time, and it will always take time, because every change in the regulation, it will take a year to proposal to make a law to make some the solution. We need to be mindful that these regulations, changing the regulation, will take time, but at the same time, we should not try to make this regulation difficult for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is a practical side of it, and there's a negative side of it. So now the effort to actually build the wallets and get them in there, at some level, you see different approaches around Europe. Some are aiming directly for a full certified wallet. Other will release early versions, like Denmark is planning. So to work both in both of these tracks at the same time, and not miss out on the innovation. And I think it will also be even clearer when we get the next regulation, where maybe the kind of framework will be a little bit different. When I said it's also important to realize that how you use these identity systems and also attributes, they are driven by legislation. They mean something because they are legislated. Like a qualified attribute has meaning because there is legislation around it.
Yes.
And that is often a hard concept to explain to people because they see the technology is there already. But I think it's important to have both aspects with us at the same time.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And then my final question for you, and then afterwards we'll open up the room to questions. So audience members, feel free to start thinking about what your questions might be. And if you're shy, you can also enter them into the Slido. But then my last question is, we here in Latvia, we have several identification platforms. There's e-products, there's Smart ID. The difficult part is when you start trying to get them to communicate to other platforms. So how to other countries? How do we ensure interoperability and data sharing across all EU member states? I guess quick answers down the line. Gatte, do you have any perspective?
I think that will be like if we implement the wallet like a step one to function it nationally, but of course it had to be interoperable across Europe, but still there are a lot of things to solve. So I don't have like a proper question regarding currently. So we are doing a lot of work in the Nordic Baltic format to ensure this identity matching, identity recognition, but it's still a challenge to do it and accomplish it in a proper way.
Mm-hmm. Riho?
Of course, this is a challenge, and this is the part with what I mentioned with the endurance, because if you go for a sprint, you see the finish line. If you go to endurance, you don't know if there is a beer around the corner. So, there will be obstacles in the road. Mm. We just don't know all of them, and it's a good thing. We can adapt.
Mm-hmm. And try and solve it one step at a time. First, there is the wallet to build that, to get the basic function interoperable. Can we do authentication? Can we do signing? Can we get those things to work cross border? Then you have the more basic attributes, like we have been talking about digital driver's license, get that to function across border. And then you're moving into one domain after another. For instance, how will it work in education? How will you get access to your health records across border? And you have to continue with different user stories, and it will take a lot of time to build a full ecosystem. Mm-hmm. But it is the next generation of EID. It's not just a wallet that you're putting in there in 2 years. It's supposed to be the road to the future of identity.
And our final, very symbolically, comment on this question from our European Commission rep.
As with every such project, you kind of need to start with user needs, right? So to understand what the customer really wants and to get the best product. I think generally, even without the European Digital Identity Framework, we see quite clearly that member states are moving to meet the demand of moving away from physical documents to digitizing. It's quite common to not have to carry around your driving license anymore. It's very common to across EU to use an app to identify yourself, not carry around an ID card nationally. There are cases where you know people are so used to in one country, and then when you go to another country, they try to identify themselves and they run into problems, right? One example was that a person couldn't board the plane and had to take the bus back, you know. So that's kind of the thing that we're trying to kind of the demand that we're trying to deliver. So the biggest challenge is actually to deliver on this expectation of especially if you look at younger generations, then perhaps not in this room, but generally, then the expectation is more kind of clear. So I guess that's the biggest challenge to then make that happen, right? And there, as Rio said, there is always going to be some unknowns, some small issues, but I'm quite sure that it can be overcome.
Fantastic. The future is bright. So do we have any questions from the audience for our esteemed panelists?
I have plenty.
You have plenty. Great. Yeah. In the best Baltic Nordic traditions, the questions are submitted anonymously.
Yeah. That's the benefit of it. And I'll start untraditionally from at least popular ones, because the most popular one will just kill the wipe. So questions are, why not develop a common wallet instead of forcing 28 countries to develop their own, but with the same specification? That's a waste of taxpayers' money.
Mathis? Why isn't the European Commission
I'm not sure the tone one? Is correct, but...
It was, if I remember correct, this question was considered indeed for the proposal initially. And if I remember correct, there is no official answer, but I think if I remember correctly, part of the discussion was that really identity is national sovereignty. This is something that is very core to what each government does, and because wallets primarily are identification methods, then this should really be left for each member state, and this kind of approach was never questioned in the negotiations by member states.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Tor. You first.
Yeah, but you hear this so very often. Why not just build one wallet? But look at the legislation. The wallet is only one box in the ecosystem picture. There is a whole ecosystem to realize, and that would be different from different countries, how you can do that, because we are functioning a little bit differently. And some of the components, both on wallets, on signature, trust, other trust services, I'm sure you will see consolidation. You will see large European partners providing them for member states. But
on private company level?
Yeah,
not,
maybe.
But not only. I just wanted to mention an example of those large-scale projects. They are like a good example when they are like also supported by Commission, those... wallet can be developed, and the Latvian wallet, for example, pilot this is being now kind of published as open source too, so any country can access and use if it's like interesting for them. So it's not like it's mandatory to develop your own. You can also like take already something that's being made by other ones.
You also mentioned that there will be multiple players in the field. With the specifications will be the same, but players will be different. Then the question is like this: why don't we use the working example, like Ukrainian DR? Or that will be only one of the players, or could be?
Yeah, DR can definitely be one of the players once Ukraine is joining the EU, and DR will be built according to the EIDAS regulations. Then obviously. And clearly, they are one of the players.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's every country can say that their approach is the best, and why not use the one that we have?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, they are already like a different wallets in different countries, but they are not built according to the
exactly
standard.
Exactly, it's because if you go to any forum, then say that everybody has a wallet nowadays.
Yeah. By the way, will it work together with Apple Wallet and stuff? So will they be harmonized in a way or integrated in a way? What's the plan?
Legislatively, no. Technically, yes. Okay. I think Matis can elaborate, but on the technical level, practically, we again in the ZS we have experience to issue standardized credentials to the Apple wallets in one of the big G7 countries.
So most unexpected question at this discussion panel probably is, what if there's no electricity?
In the phone, you mean?
Then I mean, yeah, something doesn't work. The thing don't work, no electricity.
The so AWS what's the backup servers plan? Go down.
What if you lose your ID card?
Yeah, or the passport. All right, you need both. Right? That's the
No, I mean, it's kind of the same situation. If you didn't charge your phone, it's kind of like if you didn't or if you lost your passport or if you didn't find it. So
carry the ID card or passport anyway.
No, rather carry a power bank with you, for instance.
What about the readers, if there's no like electricity for readers at the spot?
The specification allow for, I guess, the electricity is, it's a critical infrastructure, so for anything in life right now, but as is internet, but the specifications are designed in a way that these wallets can work also without not electricity, but internet.
Yeah, connection to internet. So they could be standalone entities. Mm-hmm. Well, let's kill the discussion with this question. Post-quantum cryptography, you know, is coming. So what about that? All our efforts will be gone like this because somebody will be able to crack all the longest lines of digits.
No.
It's considered. Yeah. It's a risk that is being considered, so it's super technical or detailed thing, but it's something that a number of very smart people are continuously working on, and in the wallet work we are taking into account of this. We specifically analyzed this at one point of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cryptography part is only isolated part of the wallet that can be replaced, and it is this post-quantum issue is much, it's remarkable, but it's overestimated. It's something that is easier to replace than we think.
All right.
Just do the upgrades.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, the panelists and Julia Gifford. Thank you very much for very lively communication here.
Thank you.